Welcome to the Error Bar, serving half measures of cerebral intoxicant. In this episode, how different people see the world of colour differently, the study of love that triggered a studied hate, and the annual review of the Error Bar's existence. Here is the Brain News on the 7th of November, 2022. Colour inconstancy. The Error Bar is a long-term subscriber to the Scientific American magazine. It's usually on the bar, absorbing the spillover from a bubbly pint of red ale. This month, the magazine contains an interview with Dr. Boston from the University of Sussex in the UK. The journalist and the scientist discussed how people differ in their perception of colour. The background to the interview is a comprehensive, majestic 35-page review that Dr. Boston published last month in the journal Annual Review of Vision Science. Boston's review starts with the individual differences in the cells in our eye, the so-called rods and cones, that receive light and generate electrical signals in the optic nerve. Loyal listeners to the Error Bar will recall our interview with Dr. Christopher Taylor in episode 5, in which he explained how chickens may very well see the colour of the universe in very different ways to us humans. But, as this review makes clear, us humans also see the universe of colour in very different ways to each other. Due to a relatively high frequency of mutations in the genes for colour vision, 2% of X chromosomes are missing one of the colour genes, giving about 0.01% of males monochromatic vision, like seeing in black and white. Then, about 6% of males and 0.5% of females have anomalous colour vision, a bit like the red-green colour vision deficiency. There is even evidence that some females have colour vision capabilities approaching the sophistication of birds. Unlike some written accounts of colour vision differences, however, Boston continues past the retina and up the geniculostriate pathway to the visual cortex, an important part of the brain involved in, well, vision. And they don't stop there. What about the environment you live in or the language you use to name colours? All affect the way that our brain perceives the light that enters the two holes in the front of our heads. Conclusion: both the science and the communication are highly recommended reads. The Science was by Boston in Annual Review of Vision Science, reported in the Scientific American. Triggers for love and hate. The Daily Mail, a British tabloid that rarely misses an opportunity to misrepresent science, leads on an emotive, difficult story from the United States about the use of non-human primates, monkeys, in vision research. Professor Margaret Livingston has studied the brain and its visual system for decades. She has worked with lobsters, cats, monkeys, and humans. It is some of her recent work with monkeys that has caused controversy. Livingston was elected a member of the National Academy of Sciences in the USA, and as such was invited to present some of her work. She took the opportunity to write about some observations made in female monkeys shortly after they gave birth. In one monkey that gave birth to a stillborn infant, her lab noticed that providing a soft monkey toy stimulated maternal behaviours. Following this observation, her team studied this behaviour in more depth, and experimentally. By removing infant monkeys from the womb before birth, and replacing the infant with a soft toy. In a second series of experiments, the lab has used common surgical procedures to close the eyelids of newborn monkeys to study their visual development. Animal rights campaigners and some researchers working with animals have described Livingston's work as unethical, inhumane, and cruel. Is it unethical to study monkeys in this way? No. The ethics of animal experiments is not easy. What is easy, however, is to see how the Daily Mail has framed this story. The majority of their coverage is of the protest against the research, and very little is on the reasons for it, despite a lengthy and detailed statement given by Livingston. Perhaps the Mail Online were upset that the distinguished US neuroscientist declined to comment to the undistinguished UK tabloid. More likely, they chose to fuel outrage by describing, and I quote, "research that involved ripping newborn monkeys from their mothers." The research did not involve any ripping. Careful surgeries to remove the baby monkeys were conducted under anesthesia. I've met many researchers who work with animals. I've received training in animal research and have done some work with animals myself. I am also an animal lover. These things are not incompatible, but they do conflict. Many scientists share these ethical dilemmas. In a letter written by the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, a neuroscientist supports their case to close down this line of research with evidence from 23 papers detailing the effects of visual deprivation on the brain. Much of this evidence was obtained directly from animal experiments. For now, in the interest of balance, Professor Livingston can have the final words. She writes, "Whether you support animal research or not, you have benefited from therapies derived from work done in animals. And so have your pets. Veterinary medicine also relies on studies in animals. Pets that receive antibiotics, painkillers, cancer treatments or vaccines, or have surgery, are the beneficiaries of research done in animals." Conclusion: ethics isn't monochromatic. The science is by Livingston in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences USA and Grimm in Science, reported by the Daily Mail. Why is the error bar open? During a particularly moist evening session in the bar last Wednesday, I was asked, "Why do you do a podcast?" After spluttering the usual, "Why does anyone have a website or a social media account or update their Google Scholar profile or write a blog? I mean, why does anyone even do or say anything to anyone anymore anyway?" I bought another round of drinks and deftly moved the conversation onto something more triggering. Since then, I've wondered, again, why the bar is open. For any new or old listeners of the audio version, or readers of the text version, or retweeters of the social media version, this is why. First, for many years, most of my outrage at how poorly some science is done, or how poorly it can be communicated, was confined to chats in the pub, questions at seminars, or stolen conversations at scientific conferences. The COVID pandemic stopped all of that. Without this podcast to let off my superheated air, the critical nuclear reactor in my brain would have gone, critical. Second, without the error bar, I'd feel a certain need to write and publish commentaries on some of the science that I come across that I feel needed such a comment or correction. With the error bar, I can instead just focus on writing the one or two papers each year that I actually care about. Third, I hope that the error bar provides a service to those of you who might otherwise feel you need to read the Daily Mail, just in case they write a story about a scientific topic you care about. To be honest, if you don't work on animals, AI, or dementia, then I wouldn't worry too much about that. Fourth, it's fun. It's weirdly fun. It's nerdly fun. It also involves signal processing and database programming, which are two of my favourite pastimes. If you like the error bar, then please tell a friend or colleague to listen, share on Twitter or another animal-based microblogging site, put a link to an episode, story, or interview in your teaching materials, or just stand outside the BBC until they yield to your demand that I be given a 5-minute prime time slot every week. Conclusion: thanks for listening. It's closing time at the Error Bar, but do drop in next time for more brain news, fact-checking, and neuro-opinions. Take care. The Error Bar was devised and produced by me, Dr. Nick Holmes, for now from the University of Nottingham. The music by D. Yankee is available from the Free Music Archive. Find us on theerrorbar.com, on Twitter @bar, or email talk @theerrorbar.com.